Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The NBA playoffs are underway. We will get back to Tiger Woods probably in an hour or so. Also have last but not least to end the show. But I love the NBA, and it feels a little bit more wide open than it has in the past, which makes these NBA playoffs very exciting. So joining us now on the Danny Parkin Show, we appreciate him staying up with us. He's currently covering Toronto against Orlando. Dan Wieke, national NBA writer for the LA Times with us on CBS Sports Radio and Sirius 206. Dan, thanks so much for the time, man. How you doing?
I'm good. You know, I'm in a little bit of a Tiger hangover as well right now. You know, a big deal up here in Canada. Everybody kind of, during press conferences at the Raptors practice, you know, Kawhi Leonard would be talking, and you could see everybody in the room sort of their eyes shift towards the TVs that had the golf on with the sound on while Kawhi was whispering whatever he was whispering.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know how you go through NBA press conferences when that was going on, because athletes from every sport weighed in on it. Like, it really did show the transcendent nature of what Tiger Woods had become.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, I mean, everybody can kind of appreciate greatness, but I think guys who are at that elite level appreciate it even more. And he's meant so much to athletes, particularly black athletes in this country. I think to see sort of the outpouring for that, it wasn't surprising. It was such an emotional thing. And guys know how hard it is to come back from injuries. Guys know how hard it is to accomplish, you know, consistent greatness over, you know, multiple decades. It was, I don't know, probably the best thing I've seen in sports in 10 years, 20 years. I can't even think of something close, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm a Cubs fan, so 2016 was pretty ridiculous, but this is right there. It's one of the coolest things I've certainly seen in sports. But to the association, though I could talk Tiger Woods all night, Toronto's tough to figure out. They're deep. They get back with another high seed, and they lose another game one at home. Do you think they're in any sort of legitimate trouble against the Magic?
You know, I think of sort of the teams that lost their game ones, the favorite home teams. I feel probably the best about where Toronto's at. It took sort of a ridiculous DJ Augustine game to kind of get them there. It took the Raptors missing some pretty open shots. And I still think that you saw, you know, Kawhi Leonard looked really good. I think you can feel like, and while he struggled in the playoffs, he's really struggling game ones. I think Kyle Lowry's a better player than he showed, you know, on Saturday. And I just kind of like that this team is sort of built for a long run, right? You just look at their roster, you see sort of the mixture of experience and young players, guys like Pascal Siakam, who was not at all phased in sort of his first real playoff showcase. And yeah, I feel better about Toronto than I do, I think, about Philadelphia or Denver, certainly better than I do about Denver. I just kind of really like this team, and they seem sort of destined for a conference finals appearance. The Bucks today, even though no Blake Griffin in that game, I think they put everybody kind of on notice to say, too, that, you know, we're the team that we've been this good all year. So that Eastern Conference, I think, that's probably why the NBA feels so open right now, is because, you know, I see three teams really that could give the Warriors a good series out East.
Who do you think gives them the toughest matchup?
Weirdly, I think it's the Boston Celtics on paper. I think that's the team that sort of has the best combination of length and sort of can match what the Warriors do best. The big issue with the Boston Celtics is that this is a team that hasn't been together internally all season. They've dealt with chemistry problems, and, you know, you don't really discover yourself, I don't think, in the playoffs. I think that's a really hard thing to do. Milwaukee, you know, split with Golden State during the regular season, beat them by 20-plus points in Oakland early this year, lost a close game in Milwaukee. I don't think there is quite up to it. Giannis is this, you know, incredible unicorn, impossible matchup. But I just look at their supporting pieces, and you look at what the Warriors throw out there. I just think that Boston has the talent, the top-to-bottom talent. And I think Toronto, again, is a team. Kawhi Leonard has traditionally played very well against the Warriors. He's been very hard for them to guard. You can guard Kevin Durant. You can switch him out to Steph Curry. They've got Marc Gasol, who's a really good defensive player. Kyle Lowry's a really good defensive player. You know, I like that matchup, too. Obviously, the Warriors would be favored no matter who they play. But I do think that Toronto and Boston are probably the top two teams that I think that could really give Golden State some fits if it comes to that.
Dan Wyke covers the NBA for the LA Times with us on CBS Sports Radio. Just to clarify, are those the toughest teams for the Warriors out of the East or overall? Because I still would love to see them get Houston again.
I think the Houston Rockets, obviously, you know, are a team that they were on to something last year, right? You know, without Chris Paul, they're an incredible, you know, sort of 0-for-27 shooting performance away from, you know, making the NBA Finals, from eliminating the Warriors. I mean, it took one of the flukiest things that I've seen in a game I've covered in purpose. You know, to do that, it's almost easier to go 27-for-27, right? So
right.
I do think that Houston's a team that's played very well. I'm not crazy about their depth. You know, obviously you always worry about Chris Paul in the playoffs. It always seems like something that comes up, whether it's a hamstring or, you know, a thumb injury or a broken hand. But if they stay healthy, you know, I think that second-round matchup with Golden State is going to feel a lot like the conference finals, and I would expect it to go six or seven games. I think it'd be really close.
There's always ramifications for free agency off of NBA playoff results, but it feels like that's on steroids this year, right? Boston and Kyrie, Toronto and Kawhi, the Warriors and KD. Which major free agent decision do you think is most tied to the results that their team has in the playoffs?
I think it's Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. Or maybe Boston and Kyrie. Those are the two that feel the most sort of, you know, kind of up in the air at this point. Kawhi is so hard. I mean, that's why I'm here, right? Is to try to get an eye on where they're at, you know, as an organization with him. Where's he at with the city? And he's a hard read. You know, he's not the most expressive person in the NBA. Notoriously quiet, very stoic. I was talking to Nick Nurse today at practice, and I'd asked him, I'm like, well, what does Kawhi look like when he has a bad day? And he's like, I don't know that I've ever seen him have a great one. You know, I've seen him have sort of like these, like, they all seem sort of like B-minus days. Like, every day is kind of the same with him. And I think it's hard. I don't think they know exactly what, you know, he's going to do. And I think a run very deep into the playoffs, I know certainly people within the Clippers organization, the favorites to kind of land him if he were to leave Toronto. I know they're very much watching Toronto in this playoff to see, you know, rooting very much against them. Then again, though, you know, this is all what we thought last season with Paul George, right? Is that there's no way he's going to come back, especially after they lose in the first round. And sure enough, I think the early loss probably is a part of the reason why he stayed. You know, he said as much as that he felt like he had unfinished business in Oklahoma City, and you know, he built these connections with these guys, and to go through that sort of adversity, it only grew closer. It's really hard to tell. I just think that it's sort of like the way the league views it right now is sort of like, you know, Kevin Durant's mind is probably made up almost regardless. People seem to think he's leaving, but that's the caveat that Kevin Durant changes his mind a lot. Kyrie Irving, sort of same thing. Philadelphia, it's hard to imagine that they're going to bring everybody back. Maybe Jimmy Butler's on the outs there. And so, you know, who's left? And I think it's Toronto and Kawhi. That's the most sort of like, that's the biggest domino that can fall, I think. If Toronto struggles, Kawhi Leonard leaves, all of a sudden that could put a ton of, it could kind of really be the springboard towards, if the Clippers get him, now they have that other max spot. You know, do they get a meeting with Kevin Durant? Do they look that way? And if they do that, do they look at Anthony Davis? And can they, like, really stockpile? They're in that position, I think. Obviously, the Knicks are in a position where they can do some really big things in free agency. Those teams are, I think, in particular, like watching these superstars and kind of rooting for everybody else that's playing them.
It's great stuff, and it's the game within the game in the NBA, and it's why I love it so much. But also there's, you know, the Lakers and LeBron. If they don't trade for Anthony Davis, which I assume is still plan A, what's plan B?
You know, I mean, I think Magic Johnson, sort of in his bizarre resignation speech, I don't know, speech seems like it's too structured of a term for what that was.
Gathering?
I was there for that. It was sort of like a exorcism of thoughts, I think, is sort of like the way I would – it was like they were all pulled out of him.
He should try out for Sports Talk Radio.
Yeah, seriously. I think that, you know, he laid it out there, is that this is a team that is going to operate in free agency, right, is that we're going to get another star. That this isn't about, you know, finding the right role players, finding – you know, the three-point shooters, the two-way kind of, you know, the Danny Greens of the world to put around LeBron James. That plan A is to find him a running mate, to find him a Robin, you know. And I think Anthony Davis has that plan still. Now, there were a lot of hurt feelings, a lot of bad feelings about how those trade talks went down between the two teams. You know, there are rumors that, you know, New Orleans will never let Anthony Davis be traded to the Lakers, you know, even just driven out of spite over the way that trade request was made and sort of the view that the Lakers are part of it. Whether or not that holds up now that they've got a new front office, I would hope that spite isn't a driving factor in decision-making. That's typically a bad idea, but it's going to be hard. It's a hard sell. I think the Lakers trade package has certainly only gotten worse. You've got Lonzo Ball, with that terrible ankle injury. He hasn't been on the court for a whole season yet. You've got Brandon Ingram now dealing with blood clots. Kyle Kuzma, I think, probably helped his stock a little bit. But, yeah, they have a lottery pick to add in the mix in trade talks now. But it's not the shine is off some of those sort of prospects. And I think it'll be challenging for them to get that deal done. So from there, it just kind of you start looking at free agents and you start saying, well, who's going to come? Is it going to be Kemba Walker? Can they get him? I know he's somebody that some NBA insiders kind of feel like would be a good fit. Is it Jimmy Butler? That's a name that comes up a lot. Is it going to be that tier of next free agent? It doesn't seem like they're in on the KD, Kawhi Leonard, that tippy top level of free agent. It's going to be kind of a secondary thing. And what I wonder is if instead of doing that, if they can't get an Anthony Davis deal worked out, do they then look at sort of the second tier of trade targets? Do they make calls on Bradley Beal? Do they check in on Karl Towns and see where Minnesota's at with his extension? If that's something, or I'm sorry, he already extended, but like, is that going to be a place that he wants to be? Do they poke around sort of at that next sort of level? Do they look at Mike Conley and move that way? Because it dries up really quickly in free agency, and I think the worst thing the Lakers can do, and this cost sort of the previous administration their jobs, is when you have cap space and you're desperate to spend it, you spend it stupidly. You know, like, it's
well, yeah, because I am I crazy? Like, LeBron and Kemba, LeBron and Jimmy Butler, that's just good enough to get beat, right? I mean, LeBron and Kyrie can win. LeBron and Anthony Davis can win. LeBron and Kawhi can win. But LeBron and Jimmy Butler can't win a title.
Yeah, I mean, I think in those scenarios, again, what the Lakers are counting on is, interior improvements, right? You're hoping that the Brandon Ingram you saw the last 2 weeks before, you know, his season ended, the guy was averaging, you know, like 20 points a game, that is sustainable, right? You're hoping that the Lonzo Ball that had them playing, you know, top 10 defense, and you saw sort of what happened to that team defensively when he wasn't playing, that stuff can get them over the edge. I'm with you. I don't think those sort of second-tier max free agents with LeBron are good enough, but I also don't – they're kind of stuck, right, Danny? They're in this position where you can't sit and waste another year of LeBron James. If there's one lesson to be taken out of this season for Laker fans, it's that you didn't get an invincible guy, right? That this is somebody who, he can be injured. He can miss 20 games in the season, and then even still, when he comes back and despite playing as great as he played, there's no guarantee that he can even drag sort of whatever you put around him to the playoffs. All of those sort of myths have been broken now, So what do you do? How do you form a roster around him? I think the clock is ticking on him, and it's ticking for the Lakers, and that's why this is such a pivotal offseason. So many pivotal decisions to be made organizationally, whether it's going to be Rob Pelinka calling all the shots, whether it's going to be, which it seems like he's going to be a big part of any decision that gets made. You know, getting the right coach, not getting someone who has to learn on the job. Clock is ticking for the Lakers, and they need to move quick.
It's great stuff. Circling back around with Dan Wyke, national NBA writer for the LA Times, you mentioned it's just kind of widespread league consensus that Kevin Durant is going to leave, whether the Warriors win or lose this title. It's rare that players in their prime voluntarily break up a dynasty. And yes, he changes his mind, and yes, he's tough to figure out. But is there a league-wide consensus as to why Kevin Durant wants to leave, even if they win?
I mean, I think it mostly comes to legacy sort of stuff, right? And one of the strangest things that I've seen sort of being around the Warriors these last two seasons and kind of seeing what it's been like to be at Kevin Durant kind of on the Warriors, the thing that sticks out to you most is, you know, this is a guy who is, that in my opinion, no worse than the fourth best player in the NBA, right? Probably in the top three, and I think, or maybe even higher. He's not the third most popular player on his team, you know, in his city. You know, he, no matter what, he's always viewed sort of as a mercenary there. He's not Stephen Curry Thompson. He's not Draymond Green. He's not Andre Iguodala, you know, in a lot of ways. And sort of the Golden State, he wasn't the day one guy there. And I think that that's an odd thing. He doesn't get credit for their titles. They all kind of come with a fait accompli sort of idea that this is just going to, you know, they're the Warriors. They're just going to go win again. And they could go win again this season. He could win another Finals MVP, and again, you know, none of that stuff will build to his legacy. Now, you know, if he goes somewhere else, if he goes to New York, if he goes to the Clippers, if he goes to Brooklyn, you know, and wins somewhere else, he can kind of reestablish that. It's like, yeah, I can do this on my own too. And I think that does matter to him. He's a very human person. Obviously, his sensitivities towards things are very well noted. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily, it won't be born out of the fact of, like, you know, yeah, they had dust ups this year with Draymond Green and stuff like that. I don't think any of that stuff will drive him to leave. But I do think that's sort of the idea that, you know, he's never really done it alone. Like, I think he wants that chance again. Not alone per se, but just not with that team, you know, that sort of juggernaut. I think it's sort of like, it's akin to just someone like, you know, an artist wanting to go solo. And I think that's been sort of the consensus as to why he would leave. You know, the reason for him to stay is they're moving into this new building. It's going to be different, you know, in the Bay Area. It's not going to be Oracle Arena. It's not going to be the same sort of Steph Curry takes a 30-footer at the most pivotal moment in the game and the entire crowd sort of wills it in. That connection might not be the same when they move into the Chase Center in San Francisco. It might be a little more corporate, and, you know, maybe there's a chance to sort of reestablish some rules and maybe make that his building, not so much Steph's. I think that's sort of an argument for staying, but it's really hard. I think if you're KD, you know, to kind of look at the way people talk about you and view sort of your legacy and have it always be punished by the fact that you happen to just join, you know, the greatest team probably of all time.
Yeah, I mean, the argument is just keep the greatest team of all time together.
Yep. Like,
that's the other argument, right?
But I think there's a boredom in that, too.
I guess,
guys,
yeah.
Want new challenges. I think guys want new challenges and stuff like that. And yeah, I mean, I think on paper, the notion of going into Chase Center, I mean, look, he sort of has the league by the, you know, whatever. He can kind of do whatever he wants, right? He can go sign a max deal in New York and make that a free agency destination, you know, especially if New York gets that number one pick and maybe uses that in an Anthony Davis trade on their own. That's certainly on the table, and he can kind of make his own super team in his image there, with him as the leader. He can sign a max deal to stay in, you know, Golden State and reestablish sort of the Warrior legacy as they move back across the Bay, or he could sign a one-year deal and do it all over again. You know what I mean? And just sign a one-year max and enter, you know, enter free agency again, give himself a play option in case he gets hurt and kind of, you know, continue the leverage in the next summer. I think all of those options are on the table. It does feel like that he wouldn't necessarily want to go through another year of sort of speculation about what he's going to do and if whether or not he's going to leave. It seemed like that was a line that certainly Draymond Green crossed. I had an interview with Kevin Durant earlier this season, and that was what he said was sort of like that was like an off-limits topic in his mind as far as like joking around because that's livelihood and it's business. And, you know, I don't know that he would want to go through that again necessarily, but it's certainly possible. He has all the options.
Dan Wyke, national NBA writer for the LA Times. We've never done this on the radio, man. I really enjoyed it. We'll do it again. Thank you.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, have a good night.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.